Juan Carlos I of Spain, the king who helped restore the monarchy to this country after nearly 40 years of dictatorship, the man who helped transition this nation from an authoritarian system to a modern democracy, the man of the hour, the day he ordered the insurgents from the military who were trying to overthrow the government in 1981 to lay down their arms and surrender and respect the Constitution. The monarch, who was quite possibly one of the most respected heads of state during the 1980s and 90s, the affable, approachable man who earned the admiration of people from all walks of life, has spent these final years in a state of disgrace. In 2014, he abdicated for what seemed like selfless reasons. He was getting on in years and wanted to let his son take over. Not every monarch in this world seems to know when it's time to throw in the towel. But it was a surprising decision nonetheless, and somewhat suspicious. Maybe there was another reason. Was he ill? Was he dying? Or, as some thought, was he trying to get out while he could? Not long after, though, unfavorable rumors began to appear. Rumors and accusations that were unbecoming of this man. Rumors of shady operations involving the stealthy movements of very large sums of money from fiscal paradise to fiscal paradise, offshore bank accounts, kickbacks for mediating in infrastructure contracts, and tax evasion. To make matters worse, many of these transactions involved a German businesswoman named Corinna Larsen, 25 years his younger, who the tabloids often referred to as the king's special friend. Just how special? Well, for example, she and her son from a previous marriage had moved into an old hunting lodge which had been refurbished for them, at least partly. The mansion, because that's basically what it was only 20 kilometers away from his palace, the Palace of Zarzuela in Madrid, but on the same property. So this was no fleeting fling. This was practically a live-in lover, and the king would apparently drive to the other side of the property to spend lengthy periods of time. By that, I mean days and even weeks. Or at least that's what they say. I mean, it sounds like something from a totally different century. So yes, I'd say that this was a pretty special friend. Anyway, terms like lady friend, close friend, or special friend are all just gossip page speak for lover or mistress. Terms the press are, or at least used to be, loath to employ when talking about their king. In fact, for a long time, it used to be all but prohibited from appearing in ink. Tradition demanded that the press tread carefully in its treatment of the monarchy, if only for the good of the institution itself, as well as the country's reputation. The fact that they were mentioning her at all represented a step forward in transparency. And the reason why I'm saying this is because this was nothing new. Juan Carlos I had a reputation for playing around over the decades with many women, some of whom were well known in Spanish society. In many ways, it was one of the most well-known secrets in the country. Reactions at home ranged widely. Some were shocked, others disappointed, others outraged. And then you had some with sort of the laissez-faire attitude who said, well, it's the king's private life, so we should respect his private life. And then there was resignation, which represented a not so small percentage of the population. Basically, they said, he's a bourbon. What do you expect? Now, by that, they meant that naughtiness was basically standard behavior in the bourbons. It was practically genetic. Bourbon kings have wives, bourbon kings have children, and bourbon kings have lovers, sometimes many. So in many ways, you got the sense that Juan Carlos wasn't doing anything other than carrying on a tradition that goes back for centuries. Was this true? Well, it certainly got me to thinking. As a fan of history, I knew right away that monarchs from all over the continent could be notorious for their promiscuity. As movie director Mel Brooks succinctly put it in his movie History of the World, Part One, it's good to be the king. I also knew of a few examples in Spanish history, but my question was this across the board? History seems to suggest so. Kings in the past didn't seem to be shy about it, often fathering multiple children, which they didn't recognize too often, but sometimes they did. And it's the world of these extra-official children, so to speak, which is actually a really interesting subject because some of them came to be very important figures in Spanish history. So we'll have to leave them for another day. Now, we could just focus on the Bourbon dynasty, but let's go back a little bit further to when Spain began to develop as a modern nation. So we'll start with the Catholic monarchs, Ferdinand and Isabella, to see what sort of frolicking was going on throughout the centuries. Ferdinand the Catholic, despite the nickname suggesting rigorous adherence to the religion's doctrine, including marital fidelity, was known to enter into relationships on occasion, in fact, on many occasions. Ferdinand had several lovers and several children, in addition to the five from his relationship with his wife Isabella. Ironically, their marriage has traditionally been seen as a very strong one and a very successful one. Part of this has to do with the fact that Isabella, and if you'll excuse my informal description here, was a badass and one of the most talented and capable leaders of her day, man or woman. Nonetheless, that doesn't mean she was thrilled with her husband's infidelities. In fact, she came to accept them, which was unfortunately the attitude adopted by most queens. The same could not be said for her daughter, Joanna, the first of Castile, who technically reigned for 50 years. It was more symbolic than real. Her husband, Philip I the Handsome, only ruled for 3 months before he died, but during their marriage, he had such a bad reputation for skirt chasing that it drove Joanna, who was immensely jealous by nature, crazy, earning her the nickname Joanna the Mad. Now, that's definitely an exaggeration because there were probably other factors leading to her instability, or maybe I should put it in a better way, inability to rule. But the existence of the other women, at least while he was alive, most likely had an impact. Charles, her son, would become the first Habsburg king of Spain, Charles I, as well as Charles V of the Holy Roman Empire, and one of the most powerful rulers in Europe of the 16th century. He married once to Isabella of Portugal. Their marriage was very successful, and it appears that he was faithful during those 10 years before she died in 1539. But Charles did have his lovers outside that period, and some interesting ones to say the least. For example, when his grandfather Ferdinand died, he ended up sleeping with Ferdinand's second wife, Germaine de Foix, making her technically his step-grandmother. Now that sounds scandalous, but the fact is she was only about 10 years older, and they had a daughter together. He also had two more children with two different lovers before his marriage, and another affair with a German singer later in life. Her name was Barbara Blomberg. Their son was the famous John of Austria, one of the most dashing and famous figures of the century. Charles's son Philip II, who was the next king, was a bit of an oddball. He was said to be extremely religious, very pious, very conservative, puritanical, almost prudish in his attitude towards sexuality. But behind the scenes, things apparently were a lot more relaxed. He married four times in his lifetime. First was Maria Manuela of Portugal, then Mary Tudor of England, then Isabel of Valois, and finally Anna of Austria. All four died before he did. Three of them, except for Mary, from causes related to pregnancy and childbirth. This was a major occupational hazard for queens back then, and I mean that seriously. They were expected to have babies to ensure the survival of the dynasty, and their efforts often cost them their lives. Philip also had numerous lovers, so many, in fact, that a clause in his marriage contract to Isabel de Valois demanded that he quit his affairs with other women, which he eventually did a few years later. They also said that he had up to three illegitimate children, but that information has not been confirmed. In any event, for a man who represented a life of rectitude, he certainly led a life of contradictions. His son, Philip III, who ruled from 1598 to 1621, was known as the Pious, and it seems that this time he lived up to that name. He married once to Margaret of Austria, and as far as anyone knows, was faithful to her throughout their marriage. So lucky her, he was definitely an exception to the rule. His only true vice, they say, was gambling. So let's move on. His son, his successor, was the absolute opposite in the area of sleeping around. Philip IV would take philandering to a whole new level during his 34 years as a king. In addition to two marriages and 15 babies, it is said that he fathered at least 30 children outside of wedlock. Yes, you heard right, that's 30. And of course, we're only talking about the relationships where they had children. It's impossible to know just how many affairs he had in all. Paradoxically, he also found the time to exchange over 600 letters with his personal spiritual advisor, a nun, a prioress, named Maria de Jesus of Agreda. This took place over a 20-year period, in fact, a longer than 20-year period, and it suggests to me that he experienced a lot of spiritual and moral conflict during those years. Philip only recognized one son, who he had with an actress known popularly as La Calderona. The boy's name was Juan José, John Joseph, and he would grow up to become a very powerful and influential member of Spanish society during the latter half of the 17th century. Now, despite Philip's prolific procreating, his only legitimate son to assume the throne was Charles II, who was born just 4 years before he died. Poor Charles has gone down in history as being the tragic product of rampant inbreeding in the Habsburg family. We're talking about couples who were first cousins, uncles with nieces. All of this resulted, they say, in a situation like Charles II. He's been ridiculed over and over, but I've come to feel quite sorry for him. In any event, it should come as no surprise, given his multiple physical and intellectual problems and limitations, that he was incapable of having children, which doesn't mean they didn't try, since having a male heir was one of the main goals of any king, and having no heir at all spelled disaster. So it was imperative he have a son. He first married Marie Louise of Orleans, and nothing came of it. The poor woman was blamed for the failure, as so often happened, and was pumped with all kinds of herbal concoctions to improve fertility. These just may have caused her death, though appendicitis has also been ruled as the culprit. When she died, the court quickly looked for a replacement because time was running out, the king was getting older and sicker. This time, it was up to Mariana of Newburgh. She was chosen in part because her mother had given birth to no fewer than 23 babies. What do you think of that? So they thought for sure that Mariana had the right stuff to save the day. Once again, though, the efforts were fruitless. Many now realized where the real problem lay. There is still some debate about whether or not Charles was impotent, but the majority of experts are convinced he was. His major health problems, his unfavorable physical features, and his unfortunate looks also made extramarital relationships non-existent. Charles died a very sick man at the age of 39, of exhaustion, as some put it. The fact that he couldn't produce an heir would trigger one of the most important power vacuums and struggles of that period, the War of Spanish Succession. And that's when the Bourbons take over, Juan Carlos's ancestors. Now, since we've spent so much time covering the antics of the Habsburgs and even the Catholic monarchs, Ferdinand and Isabella, we're going to have to split this podcast up into two and do the rest in the next episode. So that's all for today. If you'd like to leave a comment or suggestion, please do so. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks again, stay safe, be well, and hasta pronto.